Chapter 6. Above the serenely cleansed orb of Chondax, the darkness of space was beginning to fracture. One warship after another burned in close from the jump points, gliding to a halt in high orbit above the white world, each one as immaculate as the planet below. At the center of the gathering hung the Swordstorm, as ornate as the old palaces of the Kitan emperors. Its hull bulged with the modified engine coils that made it just about the fastest thing in the Imperium's many battle fleets. Like all White Scars vessels, it was kept in spotless condition, scoured and cleansed by armies of crawler cherubs, until it glowed in the velvet void like a jewel. Beyond its escort perimeter waited other cruisers, the Chinzar, the Lance of Heaven, the Kuo Fian, each one attended by a flock of smaller craft. Other 5th Legion task forces were spread across the galaxy in scattered bands, but only here, on Chondax, was the core strength of the Legion mustered, and it was a formidable sight. Trying to get her head around the rapidly coalescing formations, Ilya hurried down the spinal corridor of the Swordstorm, heading from the main operations chamber toward the command bridge and strategium. Halji strode effortlessly beside her, matching her frantic pace with easy, languid strides.
"Do we have word of the Uzan?" she barked into her vox-speed. "What about the Kalshian?"
Responses came back in delayed bursts. Her liaison officers were getting much better, but they still found it difficult keeping account of the straggling set of Legion assets.
"Kalshian is incoming," came an answer at last. "Nothing yet from the Uzan or the Hawkstar. We will keep trying."
Ilya spat out an old Terran curse, and Halji chuckled.
"You have done well," he said approvingly. "I think Kargan will be pleased."
"He is never pleased," muttered Ilya. "Everything has to be faster, faster, faster. That's all he thinks is important. But there's more to deployment than speed."
"There is?" asked Halji, looking interested.
"Any more information on what this is all about?" asked Ilya. "I could really use it."
Halji's dark face was apologetic.
"You know as much as I do, Zhu. Some treachery has been enacted. I heard talk of wolves of Fenris, which, if I am honest, would not surprise me."
Ilya stopped walking for a minute. She was feeling a bit light-headed. The past few hours had been a non-stop flurry of orders and counter-orders with no respite. Ahead of her, she could hear rapid footfalls as ship crew hurried to their stations.
"Just what is it with you and the wolves?" she asked. "Every time they're mentioned, you go quiet."
Halji gave her a wary look.
"Seriously?" said Ilya.
"For me, there is no issue," said Halji nonchalantly. "Their reputation goes before them."
"There's more to it."
Halji paused.
"I am not sure it is easy to explain in way you will understand."
"Try me," said Ilya testily. "I've lived with you all for long enough."
"All legions have reputations," Halji said awkwardly. "Some overlap. The wolves boast of it. We have difficulties in past because of it. Others assume that we were the same. They see ritual marks, the scars, and make judgment."
Halji winced as he spoke, as though he were ashamed of it all.
"We are not savages. We do not wish to be seen as savages."
Ilya laughed.
"You're jealous."
Halji looked stung.
"That is not what I said."
"It was what you meant,"
smiled Ilya, shaking her head in amusement. The scars were still capable of surprising her.
"I would never have thought it. The Emperor's perfect killing machines, and you're still capable of envy."
Halji turned away from her and started walking again, looking irritated.
"I told you, hard to explain."
"You explained perfectly,"
said Ilya, trotting to keep up with him.
"But what worries me is what happens next. If they've committed some crime, what are you going to do? Go after them? You're right about one thing. They've got a reputation.
Halsey halted then and turned on her. His expression became uncharacteristically dark, like the sun filtering behind a cloud bank.
Listen to me, he said firmly. We may not be executioners, or world-eaters, or the perfect, but we are what we are. We have never demanded respect from anyone, and if they know nothing of us, then that is their loss, because we know about them. We are faster. We move faster. Kill faster. They are brothers, but if Russ has committed crime, then the Kargan will swat him aside like ragged dog he is. Have you ever seen our Primarch fight? That is perfection.
Ilya stared back at him, startled. Halsey almost never raised his voice, but now it shook with fervour.
They resent it so much, this disregard, she thought, and yet they will not change. But then why should they?
She bowed in apology.
I was not speaking seriously, Halsey. I have offended you. I'm sorry.
Halsey shook his dark-skinned head dismissively.
The fault is mine. I should not be troubled by it.
Ilya looked up at him thoughtfully. The sigils and devices that had once seemed so alien to her, tribal marks, jagged-edged brotherhood kill tallies, were now a part of her own life. If she stayed with the Legion much longer, then she might even come to understand their mindset. A bit longer still, and she would start to share their resentments.
So, will it come to that?
She asked, seriously this time. Will the Khan take on the wolf? Halsey started walking again.
Loyalty matters, he said flatly. If Warmaster orders it, how could he not?
The Harafnical wallowed in a torrent of incoming fire, slewing amidst a silent cloud of lasbeams and torpedo trails. The mighty gun still returned volleys, lighting up its gunmetal flanks in flashes of sudden brilliance. The corpses of a dozen vessels circled it like moons around a planet, their shells hollowed out by the vast explosions that had ended them. The flagship was pulling back, towards the beleaguered core of the Space Wolves fleet now, its escorts gone and its shields flickering out. A typically rash plunge into the heart of the battlesphere had brutalized its magnificent outline, despite the carnage it had caused on the way in. It was isolated, out of position, exposed. Those Alpha Legion warships that had withstood its initial charge were now returning fire in organized volleys, staying at long range and peppering the crippled beast with lance strikes. Bjorn watched the carnage through the real-view blisters on the Hellridder's bridge. Every impact on the flagship's broken hull felt like a strike at his own heart. He'd seen boarding torpedoes loosed, just as they had been against his own frigate. The Alpha Legion's skill with those hell-damned things was phenomenal.
"Bring us in close, shipmaster," Bjorn commanded.
The Hellridder wasn't the only ship burning towards the crippled Harafnical. Attack craft from both fleets had scented blood and were racing into position. The Alpha Legion warships came in waves, ramping up the volume of incoming fire. The Wolves' vessels responded with increasing desperation, hurling their already damaged hulls into the path of the withering barrage.
"We won't last long in this,"
replied the shipmaster. His voice betrayed no fear, just a blunt openness to the facts.
"That is understood. What's the Harafnical status? Void shields are down, though it's still got power and lances. We've tracked repeated boarding impacts."
Bjorn looked out at the incoming ranks of Alpha Legion warships, most of which outgunned the Hellridder by an uncomfortable margin. His ship might divert some fire from the flagship for a while, but he guessed it would be a painfully short respite.
"They've landed hundreds,"
observed Godsmote, looking at the sensor readings streaming in from the flagship. Bjorn nodded.
That's the fight we need to be in.
He licked his tongue along his fangs, feeling a faint acid tang.
This seems to be the day for torpedoes. Time to show them how good our aim is.
He turned to the master.
Wait until we're away, and then take the ship into the Alpha Legion firing line and do what damage you can. You know what that means?
The shipmaster looked up at him, his grizzled Fenrisian face defiant.
The hand of Russ be with you, Lord.
Bjorn bowed respectfully.
Until next winter.
Godsmote, Eynvald, Angvar, Urth, and Ferith were already itching to go. Bjorn could sense their kill pheromones, as rich and animalistic as predator musk, and they fed into his own.
Time to hunt, he said.
The torpedo chamber was far below the bridge level, surrounded by thick adamantium bulkheads and lit with red combat lamps. Each boarding pod lay at the head of a circular launch tunnel, ringed with protective rune carvings. A larger vessel would have carried whole banks of hull rippers or caestus rams, their prows tipped with clusters of magna melters and their chassis capable of carrying an entire squad into combat. But the Hellridder had the minimum complement for its class. 10 slender tubes, each one kitted with a single melter-burst prow and reinforced impact zone. The torpedoes were less than 6 meters long in their launch berths and had room for a lone power-armored occupant.
Holy hell,
swore Godsmote, looking doubtfully at his coffin-like receptacle.
They're minimally guided once launched,
said Bjorn, clamping his axe to the front of his breastplate and lowering himself into the torpedo.
Try to get a lock once you're in the flagship. If we can muster, so much the better. If we can't, just kill everything you find.
The pack clambered into position and shackled down their restraint cradles. Warning lights began to throb angrily, and the last of the launch crew scuttled free of the chamber. Bjorn lay back in his capsule, feeling the growing vibration of the device's thrusters.
Journey well,
he said, his parting order as the coffin door closed over him. Locking bolts slid shut with a cascade of clangs. Bjorn heard his breathing hot and heavy in the dark. He clenched the fingers of his hand, feeling confined.
This is how dreadnoughts must feel, he thought. Poor bastards.
The thrusters behind him keyed, rising quickly to a dull roar. He heard blast hatches slide open, followed by the rush of escaping air. The torpedo trembled like a living thing, Bjorn's helm display, interfacing seamlessly with the capsule's onboard systems, gave him a countdown.
Here we go.
The torpedo blasted down the tube. Bjorn slammed back against his harness, his whole body thrown up against the rear bulkhead. He had an impression of immense straight-line speed for a few seconds, then a wild change of trajectory as the torpedo swung down and towards the reeling behemoth of the Hrafnical. Gritting his teeth against the colossal pull, he studied the sensor readings tearing down the interior of his rattling helm. He saw the glowing points of the other torpedoes following him down, spiralling through burning zones of lasfire. The flagship loomed up with horrifying speed, a huge block of glowing wire frame against a black void field. He braced for the impact. And then it came. A burst of melted detonation that made the torpedo shudder, followed by a massive explosion that hurled Bjorn hard against his restraints. Even in power armor and protected by the torpedo's outer shell, the impact was ferocious, wrenching him forwards and nearly causing him to black out. The tube ground onwards for a few more meters, shivering as it carved its way through solid hull casing. A second later, and the torpedo's locking bolts withdrew with a hiss. Shaking his head to clear it, Bjorn thumped the restraint cage's release mechanism. His capsule opened up, and he clambered to his feet, unlocking his axe and sweeping it around him. Debris slewed past, caught in the howl of the rapidly depressurizing ship atmosphere. He leant against it, fighting through the maelstrom, his armour dragged at by guttering flames. The metal decking around him was twisted from the melter impact. He had to clamber up through the wreckage before finding surer ground, all the while fighting against the roar and rush of racing oxygen. The lumens had shattered on his way in, and his helm's night vision was a smear of movement. Only once past the next bulkhead along was he able to seal a blast door behind him and halt the depressurization. He was inside the Hrafnical, somewhere down in the lower decks. He activated Bloodbringer's disruptor field, flooding the confined space with ice-blue luminance.
"Report!"
he voxed over the pack-wide comm, blink summoning locator runes for the others. Nothing came back. No locators, no responses. His display looked damaged, a criss-crossed maze of feedback and half-resolved target locks. He clanged the haft of his axe against the side of his helm, jolting the signals and forcing a quartet of fresh target locks to swim across the display.
"Skitch!"
he spat, frustrated, pressing on down the corridor and opening up another slide door. On the far side was a supply depot, its ceiling lost in the distance and its shadowy walls soaring up on either side. Towers of transit crates reared away in every direction, locked together by hulking metal scaffolds. Chains hung down from the roof space from inert cargo loaders, themselves suspended from the chamber's summit on heavy metal rails. Ahead of him, the darkness was broken by muzzle flares and explosions. Throttled cries echoed down the narrow paths between the towers, swiftly cut off. He smelled the familiar odours of combat. Physoline smoke, blood, human fear.
"Where is my pack?"
He started to run down the canyons, cursing the junk swarming over his tactical display. He sprinted straight ahead, eventually breaking into an open space beyond the first wall of stacked crates. A lifter had been brought down ahead of him in a tangled mess of broken metal and severed chain links, bigger than a warhound titan, even in its ruin. For a moment, Bjorn saw nothing else. No bodies, no targets. Then, the tower to his right blew apart in a welter of burning plasteel. A warrior in pearl-grey armour flew across the plasteel deck plates in front of him, broken limbs rolling, skidding to a halt and leaving a long slick of blood in his wake. Bjorn whirled around, hackles up, wondering what could cast aside a fully armoured space marine with such disdain. Then the enemy stepped from the shadows, and he understood perfectly. The Khan stood in his private meditation chamber, high up on the terraced shoulders of the Swordstorm. Before him rose a many-faceted, crystal-flecked dome, looking out into the void beyond. He watched his ships suspended in the blackness, lined up ready for action, every one of them poised for his command. Many thousands of souls crewed those ships, both space marine and mortal. Each one alone had the potential to annihilate worlds. Together, their power was almost incomprehensible.
"Has this much power ever been concentrated in so few pairs of hands?" he wondered. "The entire galaxy entrusted to 18 brothers. The peril of it is obvious."
The Khan's proud, aquiline face lowered towards his ornate breastplate gorget.
"My father knew the risks. He must have done. Why is he silent now?"
He turned away from the observation dome. Artifacts lined the walls around him. Ancient flintlocks, sabres, mauls and halberds. His boots sunk into a thick fur rug. Books from 1,000 worlds and from the span of 10,000 years lined hardwood shelves, lit up by the soft light of a real fire. His movements were quietly powerful, like a tiger prowling back and forth in its cage. His cloak rippled all the way to his ankles, brushing against the ivory and gold of his battle plate and shrouding the scabbard of his Dao blade.
Magnus, he brooded, staring into the flames. My good friend.
He remembered their initial encounter on Ulanor, meeting on the Triumph Plain, with the last blood of the slain greenskin still stinking in the air.
Greetings, brother, Magnus had said, grinning across his strange, ruddy face,
striding down from his lander with his rouged and cartouched cabal in tow.
You were actually fighting here, they say.
The Khan bowed.
In the system. Horus took the core world.
Magnus clapped his big hand on the Khan's shoulder.
Of course he did. How are you? You look leaner than you were, if such a thing were possible.
The Khan gave an equivocal shrug. Magnus was a little taller than him, a little broader, with his florid scarlet mane and decked out in flamboyant ornamentation. He looked like one of the Quo Golden Emperors the Khan had killed.
I dislike these gatherings, the Khan said,
looking out over the plain at the gathering masses. Thousands of Legion battalions had already made planetfall, and the polished stone expanse milled with the heavy equipment of half a dozen different legions. The air was thick with engine fumes and kicked-up dust. Above them, low in the atmosphere, hung the massive shadows of bulk landers.
You and I both, agreed Magnus. Will we have a chance to speak?
The Khan drew closer.
I hope so. The Angel is here. We need to confer. About the Librarius? You must have heard the rumours.
Magnus smiled sadly.
There are always rumours. Russ can shout his ignorance as much as he likes. I think the rest of the Imperium is learning to ignore him. It is not just Russ. Worry less, said Magnus. There will always be suspicion of the gifted. We have to manage it, to explain it. Trust in enlightenment. You forget, brother. I am not gifted. Are you not? Asked Magnus, smiling shrewdly. If you say so. They will destroy what we have built. Angron, Mortarion, Russ. None of them rest easily with it. If we do not guard what we have won. You forget one thing. Which is? Our father, said Magnus fondly. He set this thing in motion. Can you imagine him letting the attack dogs ruin it? Mortarion and Russ will be given their chance to fulminate. I have seen it. Our only task, my elusive friend, is to remain true to reason.
The Khan looked into Magnus's one eye, seeing the trust in it, the faith.
You are wise in so many ways, he thought grimly. But you are a scholar, not a warrior, and you do not truly see the danger. A reckoning will come, the Khan warned.
He turned to one side, gesturing for Yasugai to approach.
This is my counselor, Taguta Yasugai, master of storm magic in our legion. It would be wise to nominate counterparts, an alliance between the like-minded. A cabal? Asked Magnus. A conversation, said the Khan.
The Crimson King regarded Yasugai for a moment. His lone eye glittered in Ulanor's foul sunlight, as if probing deep into the unseen.
Mighty, he said at last,
his voice properly respectful.
You would have found a place by my side had you been born under Proserpine skies.
He motioned for one of his entourage to join them, a tall figure wearing ruby power armour and carrying a staff of ivory.
Zadyn Aga Tagutai Yasugai,
said Magnus, speaking the Korchin with perfect inflection.
This is Arzek Ahriman. I think you and he might get on.
Ahriman bowed, as did Yasugai.
I am honored, Weathermaker, said Ahriman,
his voice as cultured and subtle as all his kind.
Honor is mine,
said Yasugai, less fluently, betraying the poor command of Gothic that plagues so many of the Fifth Legion. Magnus looked back at the Khan, still in good humour.
So there we are, he said. Your conversation is established. Now, must we linger on this dust-clogged plain all morning? Or does the Imperium's munificence here extend to something to eat?
The Khan remembered how Magnus had behaved then. The smiles a little forced, the bonhomie a little relentless. Magnus had been worried about something on Ulanor, and his attempts to disregard it were not successful. He was no dissembler. The truth shone from him like light from a star, pure and naive. Ulanor was the last time they had spoken. It was strange, too strange to think of that massive soul lying under the crude, hacking blades of the Space Wolves. The Crimson King had been so consummately powerful, so steeped in the rich arts of heaven, the very stuff of the Vale. If he had truly fallen, then the galaxy had become a warped and confusing place.
Kagan,
came a voice from the open doorway. The Khan turned to see Quan Sha standing before him. The Keshig Master was already in battle armour, a hulking suit of blast-scorched Terminator plate, covered in the trophies of his unmatched combat record.
I need more, the Khan told him. More information. I will not attack my brother without confirmation.
Qing Zha bowed.
The Star Speakers receive more visions. Do they confirm it? Some do.
The Master spoke haltingly.
Others do not. We have contradictory interpretations.
They explain.
Some tell us what we already know. Leman Russ has turned rebel, driven by hatred of Magnus. The War Master orders us to bring him to judgment. The 20th Legion may already have engaged them.
Alpharius's snakes, said the Khan contemptuously.
But we have other reports, said Quinja. Just listen to this. They say that the War Master has turned renegade and taken many legions with him. We are commanded to return to the throne world and stand beside Lords Dawn and Russ to defend it.
For that, the Khan had no words. He stared at Quinja, feeling the blood coursing hard in his temples.
Madness, he said weakly.
Thoughts raced through his mind in quick succession, each one half-formed and pregnant with possibilities. It had begun on Chondax, right at the end, the first inkling that all was not well. There had been no detail then, no authentication, just a stray star-speaker vision of dubious provenance. It should have been easy to dismiss, to put down to the warping power of the veil. But it hadn't. It had worn at him, unravelling his sleep.
The War Master stands upon a precipice.
It had been hard to know what to make of that. Should he have recalled the Legion to find out? What did it even mean?
Madness, he said again. Indeed, replied Quinja calmly. Every star speaker in the fleet is having a different dream. Zadjian Aga are working to uncover the truth. The truth.
The Khan laughed hollowly.
Which truth?
He felt his hand instinctively reaching for his blade and pulled it back.
I need more. Why has the darkness lifted only now?
Quinjar bowed in apology.
Every effort is being made. Is he dead?
Demanded the Khan, frustration mastering him momentarily.
That is the first task. I need to know if Magnus lives.
Tell them that.
Nothing can be divine from Prospero. It seems likely that... Not good enough!
Roared the Khan, bawling his immense fists. He felt fury welling, not the wholesome rage of the battlefield, but a choked, impotent rage of ignorance.
I have the strength of the Legion arrayed before me, ready to strike. The Ordu is assembled, and yet none can tell me who the enemy is.
Tell them.
If they cannot interpret correctly, then I shall come up to their spires and hammer their dreams into order for them.
Quinjar weathered the storm, standing silently while the Primarch raged.
It will be done. Quickly,
insisted the Khan, giving in to the urge to grasp the hilt of his dao.
I give them 12 hours. We will not remain in this backwater while the galaxy burns. Wherever this war is, we will find it.
A low chime sounded from a large pedestal writing desk in the far corner of the chamber. A hololith flickered into existence over the varnished surface, and the old scar-latticed face of Hasik Noyan Khan crackled into life. The Khan swung to face it.
News?
Of a kind,
replied Hasik, his voice wavering with static.
Ships are materializing on the edge of Augur range. No response to our comms, and they appear to be deploying for attack.
The wolves?
Asked the Khan.
Or more of us?
Neither,
reported Hasik, his normally flat voice punctuated by uncertainty.
Alpha Legion vessels.
Quinjar's eyes narrowed. The Khan almost felt like laughing. Nothing made sense. After years insulated from the rest of the galaxy, locked in a campaign that had promised little glory and much routine hard work, every certainty seemed to have been twisted into a comical level of incongruity.
Our warriors are trained by this game. They learn to see threats from all sides. Hold position,
ordered the Khan.
Try to talk to them, and do not fire unless fired upon. Some witchery is at work here, and I will not be dragged into it without knowing why. I will join you shortly. Until then, you know your craft.
Hasik's hololithic head bowed and the link guttered out. Quinjar raised a quizzical eyebrow.
I would offer counsel, Kargan, he said. If I had any.
The Khan clasped his gauntlets together. No patterns emerged. His tactician's mind, far more acute than Gilliman or Dorn ever had the grace to recognize, fell into its familiar run. Analyze, project, counter, surprise.
We must be light on our feet here, Kashyyyk, he murmured. We are like blind men fighting the sighted.
Despite everything, he felt the first stirrings of enjoyment kindle in his soul. He looked out at the starfield beyond the chamber viewport, weighing options, balancing likelihoods. This was what he had been born for. Not the running down of greenskins, but the great game, the clash of powers.
Do you remember, Zha? He said. You, Yesugai, Hasik, and me against a whole world. 100 empires, each with 1,000 blades. It has been too long since we had a real challenge.
Quinjar looked unsure.
Then who is the enemy now, Kargan? He asked. That is all I need to know.
They are all the enemy, said the Khan, striding to the doorway that would take him to the bridge. They always have been.